Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to another Dr. Supercoach podcast. You're on this week with JB and I'm joined by Pistol. Unbelievably, we are into the beginning of season 2024. How quick did that go? How quick was your off season? Did you do anything? Did you get a tan?
I'm still working on it.
Right. So there's not a lot of time left.
I needed about another 6 years until it's finished.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that gets done in time. But it was very exciting off season. There's plenty of time to reflect on last year. And, I was going to say reflect on this year's rule changes when they pop through. But we don't know what's going on with that. But how was your break?
Yeah, it was good, I think. I did a lot. I don't think I thought about Supercoach, like, maybe at all until it feels like the last week. And then I was seeing people leak things about the team picker dropping now. And it's like, oh, my God, the Supercoach. Like, I got to remember all the things I told myself at the end of last season. And I'm glad we do a review podcast because having listened to that, I've decided that I disagree with everything that I thought at that point. but no, it really puts things into perspective again. And I sort of have launched back into this and I've thrown together a team. It's awful. It's going to have 100,000 iterations and there haven't been rule changes yet. So let's be clear about that. This is pre-rule changes. We're just going to look at player prices as they are, strip everything else down out of the game and just assess the picks that we sort of that catch our eye. It probably won't be the longest podcast, but I like doing these initial reaction podcasts because I haven't had time to look at the game today because I'm in a new role at work and really I got notification. I felt my phone was dry humping me for half the day, but besides all those notifications, I wasn't really active on Supercoach today. So it's going to be a genuine first reaction for me.
Okay, that was an interesting way of describing your phone. Thank you for the mental
That's
image.
A reference from something and someone will know what it's from, but essentially okay. The vibration in the pocket is...
Thanks for explaining it, yeah. No, that's really great. Before we jump into it, JB, do we have any patron signups in the break?
We do. Are you in your off season? Have you been practicing segueing for me
instead of leaving night and day studying? I've had the Supercoach open, and I don't think that's going to help at all because it's not relevant anymore to this year. But yeah, I've been taking those segue classes.
Great.
So yeah, my balance is really good on them now. You can like
yeah, I don't think that's what I was talking about, but that's fine. We'll ignore that. We do have two new signups over the off season. Welcome to James and welcome to Shockmaster. So you don't have to sign up with the profession, but we appreciate that you did, James. Not sure what profession that is, but thank you to you two new people, new guys. And we have a couple of returning guys. I just want to shout out Dr. Misadventure, who popped back into Slack after a 12-month hiatus. He's back. It's great to see him in and around the Slack.
Yeah.
And Chizo, he had about 18 months off, and he's just poked his head in to talk about the new Fortnite update. So we appreciate hearing from him again as well.
Excellent. No, thank you very much to everyone that's signed up and re-signed up. It's definitely much appreciated. I'll jump straight into the council. We had one very generous donation. Nico says, rest in peace, Albie, a dollar for each of your years. You'll be forever remembered as a mate by everyone who met you, including the opposition, your mate Nico and everyone at the Rosanna Cricket Club. So sorry for your loss, Nico. And, you know, obviously very thankful for your donation, and hopefully this, you know, can help towards cancer research and stopping all of these, you know, passings.
I tell you what, F cancer, I won't say it because it puts all sorts of complications in our Spotify listenership, but F cancer, I can't believe how many people, but like it puts it into perspective, doesn't it, that we raised this money to help to hopefully make some sort of a difference. So we're so appreciative for everyone who reaches into their pocket to help out with such a great cause. It really is the worst, and rest in peace, Albie, as well. I'm sure he'll be missed. All right, well, I guess we jump straight in. I haven't had my Segway classes because I'm ready to just dive into it.
Let's do it.
No Segway whatsoever. What do you want to talk about? We'll talk straight into defense, I guess. What catches your eye? And immediately, I guess, the top price player probably, as a fan of Collingwood, catches your eye. But what stands out to you as soon as you open the team picker here?
No, I opened the team picker, I went to defender, and then I clicked the little plus on Nick Dacos, and then I was like, okay, I feel really good right now.
Yeah.
I know the price is $650, and that seems like, wow, that's a lot, but we're talking about a guy who we don't know his upside because he's already incredibly good and he is so young, and I would be shocked if he picked last season, let's put it that way. There's room for growth, and I don't know what that ceiling is, and it's super exciting. So, you know, pending rules, I reckon Nick Dacos, you go for the upside. I know there's going to be people that say, well, he might get a tag later, blah, 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 blah. But he could be the greatest player of all time, JB, just to put it lightly.
Hmm. I feel like that's reaching a touch. He's probably too young for that. But my question to people that haven't put Dacos straight into the team is, what do you, Pistol, think that his ownership should be if he were midfield only rather than defense midfield?
Close to 100%.
And I genuinely agree. Bias aside, you pick this guy thinking there's a potential of 120 plus this year. Like, he could be 5 points under price and it wouldn't shock anyone. The fact that he's also defender eligible is just like, okay, twist my arm. What do I have to do? He will be D1 at the end of the year, all things going well with health and such. But there's almost no doubt on that. If you got the opportunity to pick the D1, I've seen people already talking about, and this is not to call out people for not thinking acutely, which we 100% would rather people do. We'd rather people challenge every selection, whether they're obvious or not obvious. But people have already pointed out that he's got Hawthorn, and then that'll be followed up shortly by a bye. And you know, potentially it's optimal to just wait out those first 6 weeks and grab him afterwards. I don't want to dive too much into strategy at all on this podcast, but essentially we had similar thoughts last year on Nick Dacos, and there'll be a tag this round and a tag this round. We'll pick him up cheap. he's 650K. There's every chance he averages 120 up until that Finn McGuinness matchup. There's every chance Finn McGuinness isn't even in the best 22, and he just scores 120 anyway. And it's like, then you're like, wow, he's 680K, and I don't have him, and he's owned by 53%. And like, what do I do? How the hell do I possibly get him in?
How do you pay like $700,000 for a defender?
A defender of all things as well. So it's not going to be your McKerchies or your Harley Reeds that you're trading up to get this guy. You got to get a defender who's probably at that point 280K if they've started decently. And you're like, okay, now where's this other 400K coming from? It's just nowhere.
By round six.
Not by that early. So I think a very easy pick. Very, very easy light note to start on there, Nick Daicos. But obviously everything could change, but I don't think that would be one that does. Now, beyond that, there's three other guys, 600K plus, Cicely, Stewart, and Ryan. I suppose Cicely is someone that I'll probably weigh up for a lot of the preseason. He actually played less matches than Stewart, and Ryan played a full season, but I don't know. It's really hard to assess these three guys on their strength. I think Cicely probably has the highest upside, but Stewart and Ryan was so good at the end of the last year. Like his second half of the season, I owned him for that. He was incredible. He was the most relaxing, easy dude to own. He had racked up 60 points by halftime of almost every match, and it was just smooth sailing for the second half. Tom Stewart, he has his moments, but he also is so easy to own. And then Cicely was sort of in and out a little bit. 19 games played, had the highest average of the three of them, but a little bit more volatile with his scoring at times. It's such an interesting mix with this D2 spot.
So it's funny that you say that, because when I opened the app, I just pressed tick, 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 and I just selected Daicos, Cicely, and Stewart all in my side.
Wow.
And I never even thought about it and built the team around those three. Just because they're so far and away going to be in the top six players, and they're going to be so hard to get. Last year, I never got Cicely again for the second year in a row of him just destroying me. And it just became impossible because he just scored so well that he didn't fall enough in price at the right time for me to get him. I know for other people it worked out, but not for me. And these guys that are consistent and good are the ones that I want to start in my Supercoach side. But, you know, there'll be news. Tom Stewart, midfield, blah, 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 blah. Don't know if that will eventuate or not. But I think I'll probably end up with two of the three because you always find ways to somehow cut your defenders to save money to start your bigger midfielders as the season approaches. But first eyes and team picker open, it was just 1, 2, 3 in my side, JB.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. That's probably optimal. I think as soon as you sort of look at these guys and start building reasons against picking them, you really have to be realistic and just say to yourself, look, if I come up with enough reasons to not pick this guy, and this is where I do my cost cutting, and this applies to every line on the game, to be honest, there is going to be a point where you just can't get them in. And it might not be you, and it might not be your best mate that you chat with every day about Supercoach, but some people, a lot of people, aren't going to get one of these guys in for the entire year. If these three guys all have the year that we expect them to have, even if they have ups and downs, it's not going to work out for a lot of people. It might, and in an ideal world, it does, but you can't just go in with the expectation as, oh yeah, I'll just pick this guy up during the year, because it just might not come down to that. You might fade the guy who goes 130 for a stretch prior to you wanting to pick them up, and you just can't get them. And that happens a lot in this game. It's never as easy as, yeah, I'll just pick him up after his bye, or I'll just wait for this or that, or the game just does not work that way. And that's a huge thing to remember, is if you fade one of these guys, there's a small chance you're actually just fading them for the year.
Yeah, yeah. So is there anyone above the 500K mark that's catching your eye?
There's actually a lot of guys. At this point, a lot of names. So Jack Sinclair, I think obviously a lot of us picked him the year prior to last year, to this season, just gone. And I think we expected him to fall off a little bit, but he didn't fall off that much. He still averaged 107 or 106.7. He's now priced under 600K, which I think is quite a good price for him. He has the potential to go 110, I think. I don't mind that name. Do I want to pay up for him when I like names below and I like names above? To be seen. But you could definitely talk me into that pick. Dan Houston had a bit of a breakout season as well. His age pretty much, like he should have about three more seasons of either improvement or just stable play. So I can't see why 106 average is paying too high for Dan Houston either. He's in a team that is, I would say, likely to do well again this season. Yeah. He played 23 matches. He often does. I think that there's a lot of validity in that pick, as with Nick Newman. He sort of stepped up a lot last year as well. He's priced a lot lower than those first two guys at 560, but there's definitely a realm in which, if you go back and look at his numbers, when Doc moved sort of into more of a wing/midfield role, even when Doherty moved back into defense, he played really, really well. He was the guy in that Carlton team, especially when they were winning games towards the second half of the season. So if I'm on a roll here, I'm going to keep going. Harry Sheasel in a good enough role. He's now in the leadership group. With their young kids coming in, McKercher, Dersma, those guys might get a bit of that mid forward slash type of role, more so sort of half forward type of thing. Harry Sheasel might just keep his role off of halfback. He was so damn good at it, and he's now in the leadership group. I could see that. I mean, Jack Siebel departs.
I think they're using McKercher and Zach Fisher off the halfback at the moment, which means Sheasel could be
half forward. Absolutely.
Might be just enough to not start him until you see for your own eyes where he's playing.
Yep, and he could play every single preseason sort of game in halfback, and we could just say, wow, okay, well, he's a shot. And then Jaden Short, lastly. Jaden Short, lastly, only played 16 matches, but he really showed that when he has a solid role, a solid, safe, steady role, which he did for long patches of last season, then he could definitely go and push up to that 105 average as well. So he's probably the least that I like out of the list, but at 550, he's also the cheapest. And, you know, when I say like the least, the other guys are pretty good names, and he's only just falling short of those guys.
Nice. Sorry, I had to break for that. I see, you know, a lot of people jumping on Hayden Young, 525K, because he played, you know, in a midfield role towards the end of the last season, the last couple of games, and looked really good.
Yep.
I guess my question to you, JB, is at priced at a 94 average, is that cheap enough or big enough discount to start him in your side, or is it just too big of a risk with, a unknown role going into the season? What do you think there?
Hayden Young is very interesting because I think years ago when he started in the league, we pegged him as someone who would be super friendly to Supercoach scoring. Very good kick. So it's sort of the natural progression, and we start to think, okay, well, he's now doing what we kind of expected him to do, and he's now coming in and playing a midfield role and playing a fantasy-friendly role, a Supercoach-friendly role. So what's the problem? I don't think he's priced highly enough for me to just flat out say no.
Yeah.
But he finished the year last year with four tagging roles. He had 123, 118, 113, 111, all as a sort of a midfielder doing pseudo jobs on the bigger midfielders from the opposition team. He, in those games, had 10, 8, 7, and 7 tackles. All of the games besides one was 20-plus disposals. The one that wasn't was 19. He really just showed that, yeah, he can go in there, do a role, tackle like an absolute freak, which we know just bleeds Supercoach points. I think 525K is probably right on the maximum that I would spend for someone like this, but definitely, definitely capable of starting in my team.
Yeah. My biggest issue is that he's been injury-prone for pretty much his whole career except last year, and I don't know if that's his over it or, you know, it's going to be one of those players where we're like, we probably shouldn't select, but it's going to be fine. And then it gets into like round three and he's injured and we're like, well, why did we do this? We do this every year and we just have that conversation, you know, with ourselves.
I think that's so we'll kind of a catch 22, because I think we start players who are injury prone and they get injured and we go, what the hell, why do we do this to ourselves? And then I think there are guys that we fade because they're injury prone or more injury prone, and then they play a full season and we go, why don't we? So I don't know. I don't know if it's too much of a factor. We're about to talk about a dozen midfielders that probably fit the bill there. So And almost all of them are going to be in my team at some point this preseason. So I think it's very interesting. Lachie Whitfield is one that I have a question about for you.
Thank you.
Average 93 for the season, 519K. Lowly priced, I would argue, really showed signs towards the end of last season that the old Lachie Whitfield was back.
Just really matters about his gait. You can't really judge. You can't really judge this early. You just need it's really the eye test.
It's the gait. It's the gait watch.
It's on Lachie Whitfield. See how he's running. Biggest strength. So if his running is impeded at all, then he's a big stay away. So. Yeah, that's a purely eye test pick, so I can't really comment on about it in December.
Do you want to hear how he finished the season at least?
Go on.
All right, so from round 18, he had 115, 133, 137, 87, 95, 112, 92 to finish the year. And then in the finals, he had 109, 141, and then 75 against Collingwood in the prelim.
It's not bad for a defender.
Sounds all right.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just nicely priced. It's 519K. If it's not Hayden Young, it's probably going to be Lachie Whitfield for us, I think. It just feels that way. It's going to be one or the other. Like, one of them is going to disappoint us in the preseason and we're just going to flock to the other. I think one of them is going to have 40% ownership and the other one's going to have 8% ownership and the one we pick is going to go worse. But... that's the vibe for me early days. But besides that, I don't think there's a lot else to talk about until you get to, there might be for you, but for me, I sort of had a big scroll after that until I got to Harry Himmelberg at 450K.
I think there's three in this category. How would you rank Himmelberg, Witherden, now that Hearn's retired, and Nasiah Wanganeen-Mallara?
I mean, pretty easily, I think. I think it's Himmelberg. And then I'll pause for a while. and then probably, maybe, I don't know, neither. Neither of these other two guys. I don't think either of them are options.
I mean, I think they
have potential, but Witherden played 22 matches last season and he had scores of like 15 for a game. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, that makes him underpriced. No, I don't necessarily still think he's going to be the man with Hearn gone that I used to think. I'm not sure that's going to come to fruition. So at this stage in December, I'm staying away. And the Nasiah Wanganeen-Mallara, I think it's just, I know he had a strong end of last season. He looks like a good breakout candidate. It was a fourth year. Looks really good as well, eye test wise. But he's not that cheap. Like 475K, you're only, 50K from Young and Whitfield. Like it's not really that much of a saving, is it? So
no,
I would spend my money there. And if I want to save money, as you said, Himmelberg. Actually, in my first draft team, I'm four premiums deep and Himmelberg is my D4, so I can't really argue against you there.
Himmelberg, though, he didn't go quite as well as what we maybe thought he did. Now, he finished the year from round 19 with a 109, 72, 91, 89. He had two big scores to finish the season, 127, 129, and then his final series was 89, 74, 77. Now, the rumours that are coming out this time of year, which, I mean, it's December, so please, please don't write this down write it down in pencil maybe, but get the eraser, like have that nearby, is that he's going to just have the one role for an entire year for the first time in half a decade. And that's going to be his role. He needs to settle into it. He wants to grow into it. I can only assume he signed the contract with GWS because playing defence was his a desire, and that's what he did for the whole second half of the season after starting forward till about round 9, I want to say, or round 12-ish. I'm looking at the stats here, but he didn't kick any goals from round 8, so essentially, yeah, around then. But he still didn't blow anyone away. I mean, he had four tons in the role last year in about 12 or 13 games. It's not amazing. So he's going to have to show us a lot in the preseason. He's in my team at the moment as well, but he's probably the player most at risk to get moved on.
No, I'm totally with you on that one. He was never as impressive, but the thing is, I think he always I can't remember if he started well or finished well. I think it was he started well, so it was always like, oh, he's on for a big score, but then it just didn't
go
for four quarters. So then you think about him being a good scorer, but you just don't remember his final score just because he always started so well.
Yep.
But it's something that we need to watch in the preseason. I'm a big believer of if you're training in that role for the whole preseason, you have some stability that it goes a long way. So it's a December pick, but I'll be keeping a firm eye on that. It's certainly a shaky spot in my side.
50K cheaper and maybe as interesting, maybe slightly less. Kitty Coleman averaged just 70 last year. He had injury issues on and off the season and contended with Daniel Rich for about, I don't want to say 8 to 10 games of the season. But when he stormed home towards the end, he obviously had a great final series without Daniel Rich. Brisbane looked better, I think, with Kitty Coleman being their main distributor instead of trying to sort of share it around. I don't really want to judge last year's scores because I don't think there was any point where I thought both Coleman and Brisbane clicked together until the finals and he had a good final series. So I kind of want to separate the two, and then obviously the final series isn't in this average. So I think 400K, though, is something to monitor. I think it's one to keep an eye out for. Like he's priced at 70 average, and he could blow that out of the water as well.
Yeah, I'd love to feel 50K cheaper. I'd feel a lot better, like a lot better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I would need to see it in the preseason. The thing is, players, they have purple patches all the time, and from a very small sample size, in the final series, having two unbelievable games, he just may be a big finals player. I didn't go into the next season picking Mason Cox when he had a good final series. It's just let's assess it in the preseason and see how he looks. But for the moment, not in my sight.
Does anyone else sort of interest you? Like, beyond that, I really find it difficult to find someone until we start looking at rookies in defense. It looks like early days, like guns and rookies, is going to be on. I don't know if you're still scorned from last season, but the mid-prices last year were just...
Yeah.
They left a lot to be desired. And I look at them this year and I'm like, there are less guys than last year that I even... half consider it this time. Last year I had a team full of them. You can make a full best 22 with mid-price players. This year I can't even find 2.2 that I like. So genuinely, do you like anyone else between him and say the 250K mark?
Oof. I think I could have a look in the preseason at Wynn Hager at 323K just because he played off the half back the last couple of weeks. I don't think that will continue unless they decide not to play Sinclair in the back line at all, which would be a big call.
A bad call, probably.
Yes, would be a bad call. I mean, he did get defensive status, so he clearly played enough time to get it in the first place. So I will reserve judgment when I actually see that. Definitely wouldn't put him in my December team just yet. I think, the next possible person I would be looking at is all the way down to Heath Chapman, 250K, maybe. Yeah. But I still don't want to.
No.
He's not in my team.
I just want to put a name out there just so I can go back to it if it does work out. But if it doesn't, then no one's going to remember because it's December.
Do it.
Miles Bergman is going to play exclusively on a wing this year because of the defenders that Port recruited. And I think a lockdown defender averaging 65... now gone open winger, which he's shown he can turn up pretty consistently in the past. I'll be very interested to see how that role progresses.
All right.
But he has to make a step forward as a player as well to sort of step into more scoring. But, I mean, he's priced so awkwardly. I wish he was 300K flat and he could make some money or something. But anyway.
All right. So
you heard it here first.
All the way down the list, you get down to, 216K. I guess you've also got Massimo D'Ambrosio for Hawthorn at 224K if he gets a starting spot. But both those guys...
It's my Kane Baldwin, 216K.
Yeah, the 216 and 225K club, do any of them tickle your fancy in December?
Okay, we're looking at D'Ambrosio, Kane Baldwin, and Zach Williams. I'm not quite sure who you're trying to sort of steer me towards.
You could only pick one.
I mean, Kane Baldwin's had a pretty good preseason so far. No, I mean, Zach Williams, I said it in Slack jokingly today. I paid $600K for this guy. So you're telling me I essentially get a $400K in my pocket and I get to pick him again? Sign me up. I'm a Zach Williams enthusiast, but there are a few boxes he has to tick. He's a 30-year-old coming off an ACL now, and he was never not injury prone. He has never not been injury prone, but we are now also not picking him to play 23 games. We're picking him to play 10.
Yeah.
And I think if he's best 22, he, of all the players around him, has an 80-plus average in him. But he has to be best 22 as well. And that's the other box he has to tick. So we need fitness. We need assurance of his spot in the best 22. And then and only then can we consider picking Zach Williams. But if he ticks those two boxes, I can't see a world in which I don't, because you just don't get upside like that at this price.
I've been a staunch anti-Williams fantasy as a fantasy pick. Since
and
I
as a
started.
Person, you've really attacked his person as well.
This is a fancy pick. I've always been very, very, very against him as a selection. We've had many arguments on this podcast about him. But even I
think I've won most.
Even I is in my side at 216K. Like, that's a ridiculous price for his upside.
Yeah.
Like, truly, if Doherty's, you know, out of that back line and they put Williams in the back line, I know he was playing kind of like half forward, middle sort of stuff. But if they put him in the back line next to, you know, old mate Newman. Yeah, Nick Newman. Then it's going to be a good duo, and it's got that 80-plus upside at that price. Like, it's pretty hard to say no. So he's in my December team, and it's the first time I'm not, like, panicking about him being in my side. So that's good.
Well, I think of it this way. Elliot Yeo lasted all the way until round one in our team last year, so... I think Zach Williams has the potential to be another preseason hero, but we'll see if he has the ability to put it on the pitch as well. So I don't know. I've obviously got my doubts that he can make it, but I would love if he did, because owning him one last time would give me a semblance of happiness playing this game, I think. All right, so we're going to cut it off there. There obviously are some guys around the 150K mark. I mean, Josh Gibkiss didn't play a lot last year, didn't play at all. Was very promising the year prior. He's 150K, but we could go through those names all day. We're not really interested in talking for 2 hours. We've already been going for 30 minutes, and we've gone through one line. So let's go to the busy line. It's the midfield. We're going to look at these guys as, I want to say, quickly as possible, but I don't know if that is possible. It might be. Yeah, there's not a lot of names that sort of... Let's just start from the top. Bontempelli, 725K. And Clayton Oliver, 674K. Crazy that we are seeing a 50K price difference in these two guys, and it's favoring Bontempelli. We know the preseason that Clayton Oliver has already had, and we from the bottom of my heart especially, I love watching this guy play. I know he's had some slip-ups, but I really hope he's mentally okay. And I hope we get to see Clayton Oliver for 23 games this season, because the game is just better with him, not just Supercoach, the AFL game as well. So hopefully that is what we get to see. And if that is, assuming that it all goes right with Clayton, are you picking between these two guys? Have you found a realm of possibility in which you have them both? Do you have neither? And if you have neither, is it Petrarca as the next in line? What's your thought process here?
So I have both of them in my current side, and now I'm just realizing, have I just gone onto every line and just picked the top most expensive players and be like, da 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 da, this is my team, and come on
the
podcast?
So far, yes, but I'd be surprised if that lasted through the run.
It's true. Look, I picked Oliver as my first picked midfielder. I came back around to Bontempelli just on my second run through. But obviously it depends on what happens, you know, in the rest of the preseason with Oliver. As I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast is aware, I have never started Oliver before, and it has continuously haunted me every year. And I'm sure the year that I finally start him is a year that it's like obvious not to select him. So maybe I'll just play into that storyline of just being burnt by the only year I ever start Oliver. But for now, I mean, if he's playing round one, it's pretty hard to say no to Oliver, just given the upside and how consistent he is. And Bontempelli, I'm a big believer in, I guess, not mucking around too much with your captaincies. I think Dacos is a really good captaincy option. And then probably, I mean, spoilers, Gorn in the ruck could do a decent job, but otherwise I'd like that flexibility of having a third person to rotate, you know, I guess your vice captain, the captaincies. And Bontempelli is definitely, I guess, my guy from the Bulldogs. So I look to him.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For the captaincy, but again, if you have English or you're comfortable, you know, day class English, I guess you don't need him. But
do you know what's crazy? Yeah. I don't have Bontempelli for that reason. I've got Nick Dacos,
yeah.
I've got Clayton Oliver, I've got Max Gorn, who I all agree with, and I've got LDU, who I think is absolutely captain boy. We saw his ceiling last year. It is bonkers high. And if I don't have LDU, I'll have Zach Butters, who presents the exact same value as a captain. So I don't know. I think it's by the way, I'm not exclusively deciding between those two guys, but I might have both. And there's a chance I have one. There's a chance I have both. I don't think I'll have neither. So I do think captaincy options are affordable this season. I don't think you have to pay $725K for them.
I'm pretty scared to captain someone like LDU. I feel like it's a good vice captain, but if you play for North, I'm assuming you're going to get a lot of Sunday games, so might not be an easy VC. I just would need to see
a lot. I'm not scared to captain him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that will change throughout the year as, you know, the trust builds as they score well. I guess the same goes for Zach Butters. I
had 23 games last year.
Not from an injury perspective.
You just don't trust that.
Just as
well.
A not to pop out an 80 perspective. I mean, Bontempelli, what did he have? One, was it one subton the whole of last year or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah. So just from a trust perspective, I might be a little bit too gun shy to begin the year. But I've already decided anyway that if Oliver were to be removed, I'd be going to Zach Butters. So don't stress too much about that one, JB.
I'm not stressed. Butters is not in my current team.
Oof.
So I mean, he wasn't, and he probably will end up. I don't know if I can turn down our new vice captain. Okay, so I think then there's a bit of a gap. So we got Petrarca, Laird, Merritt, Libba, Dawson, Dunkley. I'm obviously not going to read through all these names for the entire midfield, but
yeah.
We have a group of guys there that performed pretty well last year, 115 plus average for all those guys. Not popular picks, I wouldn't say, at this stage, just as the game opens. I think a lot of those guys potentially peaked last year. Like Zach Merritt, 116, maybe not his peak. He might have 118 in him, but he also might have 114 in him, probably equally as likely that he just goes 116 again. So just, I don't know, getting the value out of these guys just seems a little bit more difficult than an underpriced Clayton Oliver, which seems a little bit more obvious. And then, you know, you scroll down and you got Zach, LDU, maybe even Sarong if he tickles your fancy. Tom Green, definitely, who finished with a really good patch. Brayshaw, potentially, with a good buy. Like, you can get a lot of value out of those guys. But this middle group here, I'm just not seeing a lot of inspiring value there. So are you sort of thinking the same? Are you thinking different?
No, I'm actually on the same page, and we haven't spoken about this. I mean, Petrarca played a lot of the year without Oliver, so I don't think there's too much inbuilt value there. Dawson scoring I was so keen to start him, but his scoring just fell away so much when Matt Crouch joined the team that it's just not worth the risk for me. And the other guys he said, I totally agree. I don't know how much more upside there is. If I'm on, they're not in my side butters or LDU, but they're the guys that I think out of that group are the ones that could take the next step. I just don't have, I was going to say I don't have someone in my price range, and then I look at my team and realize I have Brayshaw on my side. So I guess I do. I can't remember why.
But that's fine, because I think Brayshaw on his merit is good as well, and you probably picked him because he has that same buy as Port, dude.
I think that's
where there's only two teams with the buy, and that sounds great. But no, I think of this next group, you've got Butters, LDU. You could talk me into Sarong, although he's not in my current team. Tom Green, Brayshaw, and I think that's where they cut off. To of the 600K guys that absolutely startable, you can talk me into all of them. But the guys that were, it literally cuts off at 115 plus, between 115 and 119.9, I just don't see a lot of love in those picks. A lot of, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't start this guy now. I can't afford him for the rest of the season. I don't see a lot of that. Whereas, you know, there are guys here that could make 30, 40K and just sort of hover around that price.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to around the 600 and below price range. What stands out to you here? I see Sam Walsh is floating into a few teams. I remember thinking towards the end of year, end of the season, that Josh Kelly would be one of my first pick players, yet he's not in my team. But what type of guys are standing out around the sub, say 550 to 600K mark?
I don't like anyone
in this range. No, neither do I.
That's actually surprising. Like, no one. I was like scrolling past looking for Dunkley, and then I'm like, wait, no, Dunkley averaged 115. It's just a bit injury prone. Otherwise, I would have gone there. But no one in that price range at all. I had Walsh last year, and it was not fun. I'm not running to sign up in December to join that ride again.
No. he did come good at the end of the year. Like, he looked a lot better when Carlton sort of turned a new leaf, and I think he had an extremely good final game where he looked just back to his old self, and there was the pandemonium of, God, he's going to have 80% ownership next year. I don't think he will. I'm not even sure he'll have 20%, but he's not one that I've ruled out, and neither is Josh Kelly. I haven't ruled him out, but besides that, not a lot of guys that I think go the next step. And yeah, I think I'm out on pretty much all of them. If Noah Anderson had a guaranteed CBA role potentially, but we don't know what Dim is going to do there. That's a bit up in the air. I don't know. I just don't like any other picks there. So let's drop down. I suppose Took Miller stands out here. He's someone who's in my team right now. And then let me also tack on to that Jack Steele. And
he's in my team right now.
Jack Steele is?
Yeah, he is. Instead of Took Miller, I was deciding between them both.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. And that's probably the next stage. So of those two guys, you're obviously going Steele. I'm going Miller right now. I can't see a world in which I start Jack Steele. So I'm interested on your take there.
It's more... The coach has been there now for a year, so it's more just that stability that I was talking about kind of with Himmelberg. You know, everyone understanding their roles, everyone understanding the play style of Ross the boss. And I just thought Steele was, you know, clearly hampered at times last year, and hopefully a fit, healthy preseason, he can get back to his best. It's more, I don't think he's going to go, you know, 120 plus and reach that sort of side, but somebody at price at 95 that has 110 upside sounds pretty good. And that's why I was tossing up between Miller as well. It's kind of the same thing, but I'm just a bit scared of, you know, Sam Flanders coming in and ruining those CBAs. So I was just tossing up between those two negatives and picking the one I thought was potentially the least negative.
Yeah, I guess I kind of see it similar, but the opposite. I think Took Miller, it's funny how that works. I think Took Miller is just, he's a fitness freak. If he's not getting CBAs, which he has to, let's be honest. But if he does lose a few, he just runs. And we saw him sort of play a half forward role when he came back from injury last year and still have big 30 plus point quarters. And worst case scenario, if he loses the odd CBA or two, he's still 110 plus, easy in my book. So,
yeah.
And Jack Steele, I just look at and go, I watched him so much last season. And at no point did I think there was anything wrong with him, but yet he consistently put out bad scores for me until I traded him, and then he sort of went okay towards the end. But God, that's worse than Sam Walsh. I'm not signing up to that just based on the pure PTSD from last year. But his body would have to be spick and ready to go for me to even look at that as a selection.
No,
to me, that's like Tom Mitchell from last season. I'm just not picking them.
No, it's going to be interesting preseason. I mean, you know, I absolutely love Tuk Miller. So we'll see, and we'll see how the buys impact those choices as well.
Right, so we do drop now to, I suppose I don't have anyone to talk about for a little while. I want to do a quick drive-by past the 490K Callum Mills, who's going to be 100K cheaper next year, which is going to be exciting. But besides that, essentially you get down to like, do we even want to talk about some washed-up guys from last year? Like
I got a 490 guy in my team.
A 490 guy in your team?
I do. He's currently sitting at M5.
Matt Crouch.
I do. I have Matt Crouch in my draft.
Wow.
I know.
Insanity. Oh, my God. At least just get Ollie Wines. You're talking a Brownlow medalist then.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, that's probably fair enough. Look, he just came into the side at the end of the year, and they looked better. And I it's funny because, like, I didn't think he added too much in terms of I guess his role when he was playing just that handball happy, I'm just going to get the ball and handball at 10 meters and not really apply, I guess, much pressure and hard work. But he did look a lot better feeding it to Dawson. Like it was a good him getting the ball, kind of like that Tom Mitchell role, flicking it out to Dacos or Pendlebury. So they kind of had a similar setup, Crouch to get the ball. And I wasn't sure how it was going to work with Laird, but his scoring towards the end of the year, you know, he had an 86, 144, 112, 122, another 86. And he's just got that discount because of that game in round 8 where he started as a sub. He got 35. So there's a little bit of inbuilt value there. But my biggest concern with Crouch is never if he can win the ball, because we know he can do that. It's I don't know if he's best 22. So we'll have to monitor that through the preseason.
No, I think he is. I think he earned that last year, but I just don't think he has 110. So for me, 490K is, if he was, like we say this a lot, if he was 50K cheaper, then you would see me considering it. I did mention him, Ollie Wines, in all seriousness, he did speak up about being hampered by a knee injury all season, did play a lot of wing as well, which I think will be occupied by Bergman and probably Josh Sinn or something this year. He's priced very favorably at 463K. I can't speak. He's priced favorably this season. I expect him to go to about a 105 average. There's the potential that he can get back to close to his best, but even close to his best wasn't like he wasn't breaking records in Supercoach, even winning a Brownlow medal. So I don't expect to start with Ollie Wines, but I expect to be watching him pretty closely in the preseason.
I think like Matt, I definitely don't want to hype up Matt Crouch anymore, but just like between those two picks, Matt Crouch is that proven accumulator type, that high scoring type of player. Those last four games, he averaged 108, but you know, as a junior, he averaged, what was it, more than Tom Rockliffe. I think it was 136 average as a junior, and has always been a super good scorer. I've owned him many times before in the past, so you're just hoping that he becomes that guy again. So that upside feels there, whereas I feel, as you said, Wines winning the Brownlow still didn't have that sort of upside. So that's kind of where I'd rather just pay that 20K to take that extra risk. But it's not a...
The downside is one of them will be playing Seraph in round 6.
That's it. That's right. And potentially have done his groin again. So
yeah, look, I think they're both on the watch list, but I don't expect to be starting either of them, just to be clear. All right, anyone else around the 400 or sub 400? Look, I scroll for a long time here now, and this is how I know mid-price madness is done. I don't see a single name. Like, I think Max Holmes is good, but I don't think he's going to average 100, 105 plus.
What's he priced at?
Jai Simpkin used to be good, but hey.
What's Holmes priced at? Scrolled past him at some stage.
Holmes is 446K.
That's pretty expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, Simpkins 443, Hopper's 440. Like, these are guys that you could potentially see outperforming their price tag for sure, but not starting in Supercoach levels of outperforming, I wouldn't think.
Angus Sheldrick at 300K?
Yeah, I mean, he performed pretty well outside of the sub games.
It's still not cheap enough, is it?
Underpriced. No. Again, like you want him to be a lot high 200s and would. I mean, God, that's crazy. If he was $1,900 cheaper, I swear to God. But genuinely, 300K, you're looking at a 75 plus average for him to make the money at 300K.
You want five at 280K?
I did see five at 280. There was another one that I saw as well. James Jordan at 275.
I didn't like any of these players.
No, none of them. Jared Lyons played well when he came into the side last year. No, none of them. And I think that's the problem.
I'm genuinely still scrolling. And I'm now to Harley Reid and I still don't like anybody. So I think that's
including
it.
Including Harley Reid.
No. Until
Hot Harley take, Reid. Everyone. Harley Reid, not in Pistols team. All right, on to the ruckman.
Yeah, I think we have to do that now.
All right, this one's pretty easy. For me, you've got Tim English, 715K. Some might say overpriced. I might say that potentially priced exactly how he will average, if not slightly underpriced. I could see him going 130.
Yeah.
But I more so expect 125. Regardless, I think there is just value in this line this season. And Rowan Marshall, Kieran Briggs, Jared Witt, Sean Darcy, I apologize to you all. You're not the value that I'm talking about. Max Gorn, 104.5 average. I do not have it on me right now, but his average without Grundy is about 25 points better than that. He's so good as a solo ruck, and he just was not that at all last season besides about four or five games, in which he showed that he could be. So I think we've seen enough, and he's probably going to be the highest owned ruckman, if not second highest owned ruckman, behind the aforementioned Brody Grundy, 481K. What are we talking about here? These two guys have been... Grundy has been our go-to ruck combination since the dawn of time, and they're back. I think this is the season. They both go 110 plus comfortably, in my opinion. Probably 115 plus, in my opinion. One of them probably goes 120 plus, in my opinion. And we're paying peanuts. Well, it's taking up barely any salary to get these guys.
I totally agree. I'm not sure, like, when wouldn't you pick them both? Is it only if you think, like, okay, well, Grundy's not going to outscore English in total points, so you just, like, lock in Gorn and English and you try and get the highest two scoring ruckman? Like, or is it...
I don't even think that's good enough value. Yeah. I don't think paying an extra... What is the difference in their price? 230K? Yeah.
Quick math.
That is never, ever worth it. It's never worth it. We're talking Ollie Wines compared to Clayton Oliver in yeah. price difference there. Like, genuinely, that just seems like it's 50 points difference in other lines, where in this line it could be 10.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree, especially since I'm looking at Grundy on my side, but...
it's impossible. Yeah. Let's be honest. It's impossible. The rules, unless something happens in the preseason.
Some sort of...
Yeah, you know, something...
Get a donut if you don't do it.
A media would have to hit Earth. No. It would genuinely take a lot. And besides that, I don't consider anyone else besides... I mean, we could see Jordan Sweet win the ruck role as the year goes on, but doubtful. I think at best he starts as a second ruckman. At probable worst, he starts as a sandfall ruckman, but has a red hot crack at it. But he's 158K, which I like. But he's going to be a cash cow later on at absolute best, I would say. So I think you're looking at these two guys. You're giving a nod of appreciation to what English was able to do last season. You're appreciative that English looks like a grandma and scores like a demon. But I think you're just locking these two guys in. It's pretty simple.
It's hard to argue away from you there. Big shout out to my boy Sam Naismith at 123K, though.
Oh, God.
We're back.
Big shout out to the North Melbourne and West Coast ruckmen that are 102K ruck forwards.
Yeah.
And will play every Sunday of the entire season, just about.
I mean, it's going to be a close battle on which one we go for. I'll have to have fixture analysis to be able to decide.
All right, I'm leaning Livingstone, but All right, so into the forwards now, and this might be an even quicker discussion somehow. What the hell is going on here? So I think it's pretty straightforward that Jack McRae is in every single team to start the year.
I mean, he's in mine, but let's explain it. Or you explain it.
Well, I was getting to that. Bailey Smith, ACL injury, we know already. He's going to miss the entire season. With that information, Jack McRae was already the best forward last year based on average, carried over into this year. You look around at the names, usually you can find three or four guys to sort of overtake that 100 mark, but this year you can't. So Jack McRae only needs to not get consistently worse, and his role could only have improved with Bailey Smith going out. Even if it hasn't improved that much, I think he's a low 100s average player, and that is far and away good enough to lock in at F1, because that is probably where he sits all season long.
Yep, I'm with you. That was straight in the side.
Thank you. Now, a lot of changes happening in this F2 slot. I've seen Luke Jackson. I've seen either Richmond player, Shay or Dustin. I've seen Toby Green. I've seen Dylan Moore. And I've seen Sam Flanders. I've also seen Sam Flanders at F3. But essentially, any of those guys have been at F2 in teams that I've looked at. Who's your current F2?
Sam Flanders.
Okay, that's the easy answer. Who would your F2 be if you had to pick someone more expensive than Sam Flanders?
Ooh, that is a good question. It would probably Dylan Moore, I think.
Yeah.
Just
for
upside. I mean, Hawthorn's team isn't really that bad on paper. Again, on paper. But they, you know, have an easier fixture. We know he... Actually, I think Hawthorn's got a terrible fixture for memory. Anyway, can't remember. So that's more of a pre-season January podcast.
We're just podcasting.
Yeah. But he is a dynamic forward. We know he had like the most 50-point or 60-point halves for... forward, I think it was. I can't remember the stat again. Terrible. Clearly not up to scratch of the podcasting. But he
it wasn't halves. It was the most 50-point first quarters or something.
Yeah, quarters. That's what it was. Yeah, he just explodes out of the gates. And he's so dynamic. But there's also that time when he went into that midfield that one time. No, a couple of times where he looked really good in the midfield. And I think they have just got Gunston in. They've just brought in Ginnivan. They've just brought in, was it Brockman as well? That's three forwards.
No, they lost Brockman.
Oh, sorry, they lost forwards. They got someone else, another small forward. I can't remember who it was. But they brought in a bunch of forwards. Oh, they drafted. Their first round draft pick was the best small forward in the draft by a mile. I forgot his name. So they brought in three, essentially best 22 forwards. So I'm not sure how that impacts them. And it might sound crazy to push their best forward out, but the other ones can't play any other position. Like you're not, your first round draft pick's getting games, but he's not playing outside the forward pocket where he's meant to have been the best forward pocket the last like decade. Obviously, Bruce is going to remain in that spot. Ginnivan kind of was a failed-ish experiment at Collingwood outside of the forward line. And Gunston is also just a forward. So who moves out to accommodate that?
I don't think Moore is that much of a forward. I think Moore, as much as I like his goal kicking prowess, I see him more as a Zach Butters type who, yeah, they're good forward, but he disappears for large portions of the game because playing forward is hard, especially playing forward for a bad team.
Yeah.
And I think they would actually benefit more from having him at very worst case high half forward where he's roaming everywhere and he's up in the centre bounces on the wings and going between that and CBAs. I think he's probably their third CBA or fourth CBA guy, maybe fourth or fifth CBA guy actually more realistically. And he attends some wing centre bounces from the half forward line. If I was coaching that side, which I'm absolutely not, that is what I would try to be doing, but only because they've, like you've said, recruited so many forwards. Nick Watson is the guy from the draft you're thinking
Thank
of.
You.
And he was, yeah, the highly most highest touted small forward by a long way. And I just think there's a vision. They've just got, like you said, they've added half a forward line in a single offseason. And Chol. Something's got to give. And Chol, yeah. So, look, I actually have Moore in my team right now.
Oh,
so
wow. Okay.
He is that guy. He's F2 for me. At the moment, Sam Flanders F3. If I did have to chop anyone from the forward line, it would be Moore, obviously. But I just like the idea of going with three guys who I know will be stable. I'm confident all three go 90 plus, and I think all three have upside of 95 plus. And that is why I've done it. I think all three have the ability to go 100 plus, but I'd be pretty surprised if they all did. But they've all got 95 plus upside, I think.
Yeah. I mean, hard to argue against you there. So if you didn't pick, I guess, or if you had to pick somebody as an F3 and you had Flanders at F2, is there a player cheaper than Flanders you would feel comfortable putting in your side? Because I'm scrolling through this list and...
I actually knew you were going to ask that. And my answer is no. The best answer I can come up with is probably Taylor Adams, but I think he's actually too washed to play an entire midfield game anymore. But I think he could go 90 if he plays enough midfield time, but I don't think his body can handle it. So I think if he does go 90, it's 90 over 14 games, not 90 over 23 games,
yeah.
Or even 22 games. So... yeah, I don't like anyone. I don't think anyone is good value. I don't look at names and go, he could. No, I don't. I stop myself there. There is some potential Heaney without Mills does better.
We've been here before.
Been here before. Jeremy Cameron had a patch this year, yeah, where he was better, but no. You could predict like a Rankin rise, a Baker rise. Like, no, thanks. I don't want any of those guys. None of them.
That's really the like opposite Bailey, of mid-price of madness. It's so opposite.
Yeah, it's mid-price horror is what it is. You just don't want any of these guys. Like, a lot of people predicted Rochelle would go up this year. It's 74 average improvement, but next step worthy, I don't know.
It's only Zach Fisher with a permanent role change off the halfback being the main man, but I don't think that's super realistic as of right now.
I promise you, I will not have Zach Fisher in any iteration of my Supercoach team this upcoming season.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, it's price at 67 is not really cheap enough either. It needs to be another 60k cheaper.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't say 50. I think that was intentional. Yep. But yeah, he would have to be closer to that 300k mark on the dot. Yep. But even looking at these other guys, like usually you can look down the list and say,
I can't, look, there's
if
nothing.
Everything here lines up for this guy, then they're playing midfield and they're averaging 85. And no, there's none of that. Like Curtis Taylor, Jacob Kaczynski, Alex Davies, Dan Butler, Marlon Pickett, Tyson Stengel, Petrocelli. These guys are not upside guys. They are lucky enough to even be priced at 57 average. Like they are Tom Powell. People thought he was good a year ago, but he averaged 55 this year. Luke Pedler.
I don't have any answer for you at all. I mean, you'd have to go all the way down to...
Chad Wingard?
Lower. 287, I guess Tom Lynch.
Yeah, okay. That's when we start cooking with gas again. Tom Lynch, potentially, Nat 5. I could see myself in a world have either Tom Lynch or Nat 5 in my round one team. I could see it, but it's not happening.
Then you're
but
in
I could see it because I'm
Jordan
not good at this game.
Territory. You're almost in Jason Harms territory, 258k. You're in...
like, don't get me wrong. A Cam McKenzie type could explode. Cam McKenzie, was he not there? Was he their first draft?
Yeah, but he just doesn't have the role in their side.
Like, no. I'm saying, like, I'm talking with a perfect role. Like, we just spoke about how many forwards they recruited. Maybe he has a better role. I could see a draftee from, like, maybe two years ago outperforming, but like you're picking a needle in a haystack. James Harms, could he do things at the Bulldogs?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's all these things feel so unlikely, right? Like Billings at 243.
Oh my god,
I don't want to pick these people.
Ned McHenry, and we started. No, we're not saying.
I'm still scrolling. No. I'm still looking. I mean, it's just Harley Reid again.
Thank God for Harley Reid. And then it's Zane Dersma.
Yeah. I mean, Jai Cully maybe? 193.
No. It will, you know what? Go to $175,900 and we found our option.
Maurice Rioli.
No. $175,900.
Yes. We're back to the Fantasia wagon where JB convinces everybody.
I thought it was
GWS. JB convinces everyone to start Fantasia, and then inevitably he gets injured in round
two. What about Finlay McRae?
He's in my side, Finlay.
Yeah, same.
I'm really excited about him this year. I think this is the year of Finlay.
Okay, we're waffling now. I think we've actually said enough. Overall, I think mid-price madness is looking very, 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 it's in ICU right now. It's not doing well. It's struggling. I think I'd be at this point very surprised if I had more than two mid prices in my team, but things change as the preseason goes. We know that. At this point, I'd say rookies are looking promising.
Yeah.
I'd love if a few guys stepped up and a few random names that we don't expect, just in case a few guys drop off. But I think overall, pretty promising rookies. And besides that, I think there's a lot to look forward to. We obviously need to see the rule changes and we need to get into some tactics. But having opened the game for the first time today, having gone through some names, picked some players, it feels like Christmas. And it almost is, but it feels like Supercoach Christmas, which is great. I feel like a little kid again, so it's awesome.
I think this year is going to be interesting in that given, I think, the mid prices don't look super great and the rookies probably look like the most promising in the last 3-4 years. It just gives, there's a lot more money about. So obviously, you know, when everyone's picking 10 premiums or 11 premiums, we're picking five of the same. But if we're picking 13 premiums, we're still picking five of the same. So there's a tiny bit more variation because of that. We had quite a few different players, JB, which can only be a good thing because, you know, more trades and DPP and everything. It's kind of a bit stale when everyone's got the same team, but this might work out this year. So that's quite exciting. And that's going to be purely dependent on the rule changes. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I really hope whatever rule is brought in doesn't limit the amount of starting options in our side, because I'd hate to go into round zero or round one with the exact same side as 80% of the serious coaches. So fingers crossed it's an option that allows more picks to thrive rather than cuts off half the pool.
Agreed. All right. Well, were they your closing statements?
Yeah.
Did you have anything else to add?
No. It's good. I think we'll, depending, I don't know what information is going to come out, but I'm sure we'll do another podcast probably in January. So for those, to everyone, have a happy festive period and a happy new year.
Yeah, happy holidays to everyone listening at this time of the season. We do appreciate all our listeners who are obviously as diehard as we are, opening the game and having a scroll through. A couple of little tidbits. We will have a new podcaster on in 2024, Ooh. Which I think is super exciting. The debut will come shortly, I would expect. I think they're waiting on some equipment and then they are in. That is super exciting. We're super excited about that. I think YouTube this year is probably going to kick off a little bit more than what we did last year. I only dipped our toes in the water this year. That's just gone. And I expect that to be a little bit more hectic. And I want to put this to air because I want people to hold me to it because I am really excited about it. But I think live streams will be coming to Dr. Supercoach as well in 2024. So there's so much to look forward to. We're super excited about the season. I for one, like I said, picking this team felt like a kid again, picking my first Supercoach team. Everything just looks so exciting at the moment. I'm really looking forward to the season, and I'm glad you're here, Pistol, looking forward to the season with me, sharing my enthusiasm. I think I needed this hour chat to get this out in the open. But yeah, for everyone listening, much appreciation. Have a great holidays period, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.